You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Nathan Englander burst on the literary scene in 1999 when his book of short stories called For the Relief of Unbearable Urges was published. The reviews were wildly enthusiastic, and he was praised as a new and distinct voice. His second book is his first novel, The Ministry of Special Cases. It is published by Knopf, and it brings Nathan Englander back to my show today. Hello.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
You were 29 when the short story collection came out, and critics were saying your writing was wise beyond your years. Were you surprised by the kind of reception you got?
Oh, God. I mean, it was beyond my wildest dreams. I just couldn't be any more thankful.
When you were writing those things, you never imagined somebody's going to say, well, there's a little check off here.
The comparisons are ridiculous. I know I was a hippie living in Jerusalem and, you know, just planning to write short stories and starve to death. That's about it.
So it's 8 years later.
You can describe the decay to the audience at home.
Here's your first novel. It's set against the backdrop of Argentina's dirty war. Can you remind us what was happening in Argentina in the 70s?
Yeah, I mean, I guess 1976 is the first year I remember. We got shiny new quarters. But I guess, you know,
You're talking about it in the United States.
In the United States. But this idea of, you know, again, here I am mentioning the Holocaust already. But this idea as a Jewish kid, never forget and we won't, these things happen again. This idea that the first year I remember that there was already in my hemisphere, in my life, this totalitarian regime. But everyone knows Evita and Madonna. That's, you know, Perón's most famous wife. But his third wife, Isabelita, when he died, she was left in charge of the Pink House, which is basically their White House, their seat of government. And it started with her. But a military junta took over and it was an extremely paranoid government that began killing innocents.
But it also is the kind of material that anybody, I can just imagine Franz Kafka reading about this and saying, aha, my next book, Argentina, spelt with T-E-E-N-A.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, that's funny. But I always said, yeah, till I lived in Jerusalem, I always thought Kafka was made up. And then I see how certain heads work. I felt much closer to him, honestly, after I moved to Jerusalem and lived with a real bureaucracy. And
didn't you come up with the idea of writing this when you were in Jerusalem, not in Argentina? Had you ever been to Argentina?
I was there. I went for a wedding and I went on a friend's honeymoon in 1991 and saw the country and fell in love with that city. But I didn't even know I was going to be a writer then, let alone write this novel about the city, which served me well. I loved having these vague memories, building my Buenos Aires, but with this feeling of wide avenues or a certain sense of a place, but not. I didn't go back till I finished. I was just back 2 months ago.
So you did the rest on research, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I guess part of the things that interest me, you know, this book is about, you know, authority and government run amok, and I have a terrible fear of authority my own self. I'm fully cowardly. So it was that idea. I think sometimes knowing too much would limit me. The story is so large, just touching it, you know, is terrifying.
And how did you decide to write about this period?
A thousand different ways. I had these the friend whose wedding I attended, but I had these Argentine friends who were just so deeply shaped by politics. I mean, it's just pervasive. Every part of them, you know, who they are, how they trust, is based on growing up under this junta. And also for me, I think it was up till now, you know, my big oeuvre of two books, but I feel safer writing personally in a distant setting. And for me, it also became this Jerusalem. I'm a city guy. I'm, you know, when I was in Jerusalem, it was the best city in the world. I'm back living in Manhattan, and I think this is the best city on the planet. And I just got interested in what it is to love a city, to love a place when that place is complicated.
Well, people love Buenos Aires.
It's amazing.
A beautiful kind of, it's a cosmopolitan city because so many different groups have move there over its history. But Jews, should we be surprised that there was a large Jewish community there?
I get this book is so much about identity to me, and I guess that's part of it. A lot of this book is about names and, you know, how they play a part. And I thought it's so sort of cocky almost, this idea that as an American Jew with all my friends and their kids' name, you know, Luke and Brooke Schwartzstein, you know, that's normal to me, but that I thought it was almost funny to meet, you know, Fernando Blaustein or, you know,
Pablo.
Yeah, Walkowitz. Gustavo Juan Goldberg. Exactly. And I just got into this idea of names, but it's maybe now the fourth biggest Jewish community in the world or third outside of Israel.
And the name you gave your protagonist is Kaddish Poznan.
Yeah, people like to ask me about that as if I didn't notice that I have a book set in cemeteries and name my main character Kaddish. I was very aware. But yeah, to me, there's this wonderful Jewish tradition that I love, which is say somebody has a heart attack and survives it. They actually may take on a new middle name or change their name as if, you know, more than our soul or our person, that our name is what the angel of death is coming for, that that's our identity. So Kaddish was a sickly child and he's given this name, which is a blessing and a curse.
And you mentioned the cemetery. The book opens in this forgotten cemetery in Buenos Aires.
Yeah. When I was down in Buenos Aires, I was at a Friday night dinner at a Jewish family in Buenos Aires, and they said, "What's your book about?" I say, you know, the two single most painful subjects I could mention right now, but along with the dirty war, which is, you know, unbelievably sensitive and still a living thing there. At the turn of the century, you know, when everyone was coming from Russia to New York and being, you know, pushing push carts and shmata dealers and ragmen, in Buenos Aires, the Jews had a nice slice of the white slaving business.
And Kaddish is ostracized within the Jewish community because he's the son of a prostitute, earns his living defacing gravestones. So he's an embarrassment. Now everybody's become respectable.
Yes, well, I guess that's one of the things that drew me in South America. Again, we used to have a middle class in America too, but this is the only, basically the only country in South America where there is a middle class where people could move up. And I guess I was interested in shame and this idea, you know, of basically it's the death of these prostitutes that I was more interested in their life, but the community just wanted to be upstanding and they would have nothing to do with these people, and they exacted this punishment, which is eternal, which is they forced them to have, these women who had this miserable job wanted to be buried as Jews, and they forced them to have a separate cemetery, which I got to see. But yes, and that is what Kaddish, my main character, will not forget. He is proud of this tradition because it is part of their history.
My guest is Nathan Englander. His latest book, his first novel, The Ministry of Special Cases, is published by Knopf. So what is the Ministry of Special Cases? Does it really exist?
In explaining this book, I feel like everything, it's so strange, man, people don't even, and that's also what interested me, was that I didn't hear about the dirty war till I was an adult. But I feel like everything that you would assume is made up in this book is what's true. People say a government didn't really take its young people and torture them and drugged and naked, drop them from C-140s, you know, into the River Plate. And in that same way, the things that are just standard to this novel are the things that I've built. But yes, I built this Ministry of Special Cases, which is basically, you know, sums up the bureaucracy for me. It's this labyrinth, you know, where Lillian, where the mother turns in trying to find her missing son.
Well, what is it about this family that makes them a target of the military dictatorship?
That's part of, it's sort of like the saying, you know, just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean, you know, somebody's not out to get me. But it interests me. It's, again, I've been yelled at recently to stop talking about Argentina, that this is really a book about fathers and sons. And I'm, really look at that very
hard. Who yells at you? The publicist that
No, out? No, the publicist is right outside. She's the best. But, but just on the road talking about these other elements of the book. But this kid, my main character, you know, again, there's so many, anytime I'd open a book, I would be off for 6 months in a different direction. I wanted to tell this through one family. And the kid is 19, and I wanted to look at that in a sense where he's in college and he's got big ideas and he's a revolutionary, but in the end he, you know, smokes a joint and, you know, listens to music. He's, you know, he wishes he was a revolutionary, but that was enough then. The government was so paranoid. They were just, you could be captain of the volleyball team and seen as an organizer and murdered for that.
He was also Jewish in a country that welcomed ex-Nazis after World War II and always flirted with anti-Semitism.
Yeah, that's, again, this complicated balance. I always picture these boats coming from Europe after the war. I just picture the buffet with top Nazis and Jews surviving the camps, you know, lining up for breakfast. But yeah, they took both sides in. And that's a weird thing. You know, the Jews were disappeared in an outsized number. You know, part of that is anti-Semitism, and part of that is if they were politically active or psychologists or, you know, it's a weird mix. But there's surely an element of anti-Semitism, but everything there is hidden. Even now, I couldn't get any friends down there to admit to anti-Semitism, even though if I look at studies or reports, you know, it's everywhere. But yet my friends from a certain class said they never felt it. So it's there and it's not there. That's the whole country for me.
And when Jacobo Timmerman came to this country and complained about having been thrown into jail because he was Jewish, largely a Jewish journalist.
Yeah.
Many American neocons then said he was lying.
Yeah, well, was surely not. Yeah, there was, you know, there'd be pictures of Hitler on the wall. People, you know, there were surely, if you were Jewish and being tortured, it seemed to have come up, let us say.
Now, you've described both of your books as being chock full of Jews, and yet you've said you don't consider yourself a Jewish writer. How does that work?
Yeah, it's a strange thing. I feel like, you know, if it's a, you know, Jewish audience, I feel like people come up after reading and say, can I give this book to my Gentile friend? And it's such a strange, I feel like it's this limiting concept that the Jewish community wants me to accept, which is you wouldn't hand someone, you know, not that I'm comparing my own work, but that you wouldn't hand someone Crime and Punishment and say, it's about Russians, you know, give it a try. You know, it's the idea is that a person's universe in their head is a complete universe. And for me, almost, I have to be the writer, and for me, this idea is my characters, they are not of a limited universe. Kaddish is not a qualified man that he is. He's not just a man, he's a Jewish man. James Baldwin is the example. If he had to sit down in the morning and say, am I an African-American writer today or am I gay? It's actually a very limiting thing. So to me, I grew up in this world, and it is a complete universe to me, and I refuse to see them as somehow limited in my own head, that being Jewish is somehow lesser.
And as I discovered in reading Arnold Rampersad's book, about Ralph Ellison, Ralph Ellison could speak Yiddish. So it is a complicated world. Shutting our eyes to the injustices happening around us isn't limited to Argentina. It happened in East Germany with the Stasi, for example. In fact, it happens in a lot of countries. Do you think we're safe from the persecution that this leads to in Western democratic societies?
I guess part of, you know, what interests me about this is the hindsight of time. You know, this whole book is about, because to kill someone, you kill them in the moment, you deny them a present and a future. But this idea of disappearing people is to undo the past. And I got to looking at how things are always retroactive. You know, the date of the coup is March 24th. Well, it started the 23rd and it started before that. I feel like every place where something happens was that, you know, Germany was this unbelievable society, and it doesn't, until it happens, it could never happen here. And I surely didn't write a political book, even though it's being – one wants a fiction to be universal and to grow in time and space. But there is this political element to the book now because, yes, I deal with habeas corpus and I deal with this idea of governments removing rights from people. So I think anything could happen anywhere, but I didn't write some sort of book of great warning.
You've also made your protagonist a rather flawed character.
Yeah, I guess also it's about both – you know, you mentioned he is an outsider, and I guess I feel like communities need their outsiders to see themselves. And I just wanted to look at this idea of how much intent counts for, both as Argentina, what is it to be alive in that society when the things are happening and to do nothing? And also in terms of Kaddish, my main character, he is trying his best. And I guess I wonder what that counts for if we try our best and just continue to fail. I'm surely thinking of that with my new book out.
Well, the short story collection won you a Penn Malamud Award, and then we heard nothing from you for 8 years, and now you come out with a book about disappeareds. I wondered whether you felt like you were a disappeared, or was it just that this book was so difficult to write?
It's funny because it's sort of it was unbelievably difficult to write, but I love writing. It's that weird balance of what true joy is. Like, this was, a very long and intense process, but I just believe in executing the unexecutable. Like, I wanted to write a story that seemed, you know, the way this book heads, the decisions that Kaddish makes, I wanted to write something that in envisioning it could not be done, you know, but I sure hope I've done it.
Well, you've said that while you were writing The Ministry of Special Cases, you were afraid to pick up other books because you didn't want to mess up your own voice. Would that be possible once you get into writing a novel? Doesn't the voice kind of take
no,
over?
No, yeah. I was going to say I'd immediately qualify that. I say I never trust to hear writers saying I don't read fiction when I write. I say, well, when are you not writing that you can read fiction? But it was more – I think it just became more difficult to find things that were right. I don't know if it's because I entered my 30s and then you get this sort of dad thing where I just want to hold big, fat presidential biographies all the time. But yeah, towards the end, I was reading a lot of nonfiction, or it was getting harder to find novels that just fit right with where my head was at. But I think that's just part of the madness and less part of the process.
Well, this book has gotten wonderful reviews as well. And I'm assuming that you're already thinking about how you're going to follow this one. Novel again?
Yeah, it depends on the day. Sometimes I plan on retiring and going to Buenos Aires and opening a coffee shop. But I'm a delicate flower. Just being out there is overwhelming. And I learned this last time. It was so nice to go back to, you know, when I was sitting in the studio 8 years ago to say I'm writing a book on Argentina. I know the next one. And it's very nice to know when this is over that I have work to do.
Well, the hardest thing I imagine is the transition of going from writing short stories and understanding that process, even though every story, I'm sure, is difficult in its own right, to writing a novel with all of the complications a novel presents.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's a whole – and it's almost – I feel like it's if – if you wrote a nice legal brief and someone said, that was great, now you should do a Broadway musical. You know, they both use language, you know, so that's it. I was like, I was painting, now I'm an industrial sculptor. It was a whole different, it was an education from square one on how to build this world where the center of gravity is weights and measures. Yeah, it was really starting from square one. It is not a long, short story.
And the next novel, I assume, will be a little easier because you've already worked that out.
I saw you're following with Ralph Ellison. I didn't know if that was sending me a message.
Nathan Englander's novel, The Ministry of Special Cases, is published by Knopp. It's a great pleasure to see you.
Really great to be back. Thanks.